The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at Zen Mountain Monastery. Hojin Sensei is head priest at the monastery and the abbess of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good afternoon. I wanted to start with something from Daido Roshi, from Finding the Still Point. After all of us have come here for stillness. Whether you wanted to or not, guess what? And some of us may not think in the beginning we could actually sit still. So this was a curious, finding the still point. He says, Zazen is a very simple practice. It's very easy to describe and very easy to follow. There's some reverb here. It's very easy to describe and very easy to follow. But like all practices, it takes doing in order for anything to happen. We have to do something. And what happens with Zazen can transform our lives. Most of us spend our time preoccupied. We are constantly carrying on an internal dialogue. And while we're involved in talk to ourselves, we miss the moment-to-moment awareness of our life. We look, but we don't see. We listen, but we don't hear. We eat, but we don't taste. We love, but we don't feel. The senses are receiving all the information, but because of our preoccupations, cognition is not taking place. Zazen brings us back to each moment. The moment is where our life takes place. If we miss the moment, we miss our life. Every other creature on the face of the earth seems to know how to be quiet and still. A butterfly on a leaf, a cat in front of a fireplace, even a hummingbird comes to rest sometime. And I can attest to those hummingbirds. Just have to put a little footnote in here. I used to babysit for some hummingbirds. My teacher had some, and I got to see them really close up because they need to be fed nectar constantly. So you had to keep filling up the nectar, and there was moments where they were still. So when Daido says, even a butterfly, hummingbird comes to rest, he does. But humans are constantly on the go. We seem to have lost the ability to just be quiet, to simply be present in stillness. That is the foundation of our lives. Yet if we never get in touch with that stillness, we never experience our lives. When the mind is at rest, the body is at rest. Respiration, heartbeat, and metabolism slow down. Reaching this still point is not something unusual or esoteric. It is a very important part of being alive and staying awake. All creatures on the earth are capable of manifesting this stillness. In Zazen, as you practice letting go of your thoughts and the internal dialogue and bringing your mind back to the breath will slowly get easier and deeper, and the mind will naturally rest. The mind is like the surface of a pond. When the wind blows, the surface is disturbed. Then there are waves and ripples, and the image of a sun or the moon or whatever the surface is reflecting is broken up. When the wind quiets down, the surface of the pond becomes like glass. The stilled mind is like a mirror. It doesn't process, it reflects. It just reflects. When there's a flower in front of it, it reflects a flower. When the flower is gone, the reflection is gone. When a fire engine goes by, we hear the fire engine. When the fire engine is gone, its reflection is gone. The mind returns to that original smooth surface. A still mind is unobstructed, always open and receptive. It doesn't hold on or attach to anything. At a moment in time, it is free. So I was seeing everybody sit in the morning, and it was so beautiful. We kind of feel like this mountain range in the dark, just cascading this presence of humans resembles a mountain range, imperturbable, really bold, really still. I remember in the temple, in the summers, we didn't have air system in the Zendo. There's no windows. So we would open the doors to the State Street to get some air circulation. It was so hot. And one morning when it was dark, we were sitting, and somebody with a flip phone at the time was at the door, and the doors were open, and they were having a full-blown conversation while we're sitting. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and we're all just sitting there. And really, a human voice or music is some of the hardest stuff to let go of. You hear that, you're just like on it. And we're all listening to this conversation. And he hasn't turned around yet. He's just in front of the door. And then he turns around and he goes, "Holy shit! I don't know. Well, something's going on in here. I can't tell if they're people or what." Yeah. It's said that we look like a bunch of forest stumps, a deep forest, and the bodies are like forest stumps. I used to like that image, but when clear cutting came, I was like, oh, I don't like that. But anyway, Joko Beck used the term called the dignity of stillness, that there's a dignity that we move into with stillness. So I wanted to explore the still point, and what is this urge in us to be still and quiet? And it says finding the still point. Do we have to find the still point? Does the stillness find us? Are we stillness itself? Have we lost it? What is a still life? Given that our presence is not about stopping anything. It's more like finding the center of calm, of still, to move with the flowing, unfolding life. Because we're not still. You know, we're sitting zazen, but our breath is going in and out. Our chest and our stomach is rising. Our heart's beating. Our blood's flowing. Our digestion's going. So what's up with the stillness? In painting, that was one of my major questions. When I would engage a still life, I was baffled. I didn't know how to see it as, I didn't know what a still life was. It was like, something was changing constantly. And I kind of couldn't get it to stay. You know, it was all there, bottles and jars we had to do, and fruits and bowls. And some people really could concretize this, but I couldn't. I would put it there and then move it over there and move it over, because that's what I saw happening. And then I was like, well, what about here? What's happening here? Where's the still life? What is the still life? So I really love studying one thing because it takes you into universes. And the so-called thing just expands and changes as you do, as you're getting closer to it and staying with it. Just like people. I see some of you every day, but do I know who Shoan is? Nope. Nope. She's not still. It's not a still life. Cézanne's paintings, I always love because, especially his fruit, if you've ever seen it, it always looks like one's going to roll off the table, or many of them. There's always this pending action. He said, if you want to paint reality, paint clouds. If you want to paint a still life, paint clouds. So, do you remember that urge? When did that happen for you? When you said, I want to be still. I want to be quiet. I need a space for stillness. And that when we did, we received a very powerful gift, a power tool. We may not have known the power, but if we touched in long enough, we'd get a really good glimpse of something that was starting to ripple and reverberate through our body and heart and our mind. And that the feeling that this is something to cherish and to nurture. I need this. Do you remember that feeling? I need this. Or maybe it was just before you signed up for Sesshin. I need this. I need to be still and quiet. And that this is a good desire. Desires are inexhaustible. I vow to put an end to them. Not this one. There's some that are really helpful. We might see how this seems to settle and ground us rather than pull us into further desire. And when we finding the still point, when we're still and quiet with nothing else to do or be, except ourselves. What is that like? Is there a satisfaction? Do we touch that second noble truth and start to feel satisfied in a deep way? That in that moment, it's enough. Something's enough. We're enough. Joko says, only in that instant when we and the object become one can we see what our life is. She's talking about in Zazen, when we can be still and quiet. She says, this is already the perfection. This is the wholeness of being human. She says, though at first we may feel small and flawed, whatever we think right and good may mean, no matter how broken we may feel, we are in the only place to begin. Stillness. To see. In Shugen Roshi's translation of the Faith Mind poem, he has a line that says, delusion divides stillness into turmoil. Delusion divides stillness into turmoil. Enlightenment is without good and bad. Thich Nhat Hanh once likened settling into stillness like a dropping of a pebble into a river. And as the pebble comes to rest on the riverbed, so as does the body and mind of the practitioner rest in the still point. And Kalu Rinpoche said, it's like plunging a clear vase, that's our practice of zazen, the stable container, filling it up, drawing water out of the river, placing it on the shore, and the water begins to clear as the sediment settles to the bottom. So, allowing body, heart, and mind to settle. And first we start with a non-conceptual anchor, the breath. The energy of agitation, restlessness begins to settle. And eventually the mud lands on the bottom and water becomes clear, just like the vase, just like the container. Daito uses the metaphor of the pond. Often in the lineage we speak of something wrong. An ocean. The body is still and grounded like the ocean floor. Our breath rises and falls like the swells of the surface. Attention holds us steady. That's like an anchor. So even when thoughts swim around the edges like a school of fish, or like a swarm of bees buzzing around, tension holds us steady. Can you follow a thought while it arises in consciousness, and then as it descends into its point of dissolution? Thought rises, you follow it until it dissolves. Can you sink below the waves and rest in the stillness below thoughts? I was thinking about these words, be still, when the mantra says be still, and being still. Adyashanti writes, there's these two words, being still and be still. Be still sounds more like a directive, like something you're supposed to do. Be still. But being still is different. It's not a command. It implies there is something happening right now, something called stillness. It's already happening. So we're just being it. It's already present. So we're being still. We can be still. Be still. Be still, when somebody says, can be interpreted as, uh-oh, there's something I've got to do. I've got to be still. And I may or may not be good at that. But being is not telling you to do or not to do something. Being. What does being still mean for you? Even speaking the words, being still, can lead to stillness. Being still. It's like a mantra. Being still. When we're agitated and restless. Being still. It's a way of drawing attention to stillness rather than suggesting that we try to do stillness. And that's a big difference. Buddha, a mind that already exists, being still is something you can become aware of and something you notice. Notice being still. So stillness doesn't mean no movement is going on. There's this point when if anybody's thrown a pot, you know, you've got this spinning wheel, and then you have to take this lump of earth and center it with gravity, just like zazen. First, you know, right after Daito introduces the still point, he goes into posture. Finding the center point with gravity so that we can drop down into the hara, rather than be up in the head, we drop down to the hara. And the hara has this expanse. It's vast. It can hold attention, strength. It's centered with gravity, and it's very powerful. It's about 2 inches below the navel, and there's no like sign there that says hara this way. It's kind of like a feeling that's low in your body. And so much more becomes available when we move from the hara. So then we move that into movement. So you do kinhin from the hara. You eat from the hara. You speak from the hara. I'll engage in a conversation and it's really fast at first and I realize I'm not here. I used to work with horses a little bit when I had a difficult emotional time, a rupture that happened, and my friend was doing horse therapy. I don't really like horses, but they're a big mirror because they have predators. So they reflect when they feel you in their space, they're very curious, like, who are you? Who are you? And they'll reflect back exactly what your nervous system is saying. So we did some things, but the one thing she said was, okay, I want you to walk down a little hallway, holding the rein, just the thing that gets on their face, and just walk 10 feet, turn around, and come back. Just hold it and walk. And so there was one window down that hallway. And I started to walk, and I'm terrified of horses. So, of course, they're terrified. They're, like, doing the same thing, right? We're both like... So I start walking, and inside I'm going, whatever you want, it's okay. You know, I'll just walk with you. So this thing was like looking out the window, bowing its head down, picking up, looking for something to eat. And it was just going up and down. And I only had 10 feet to walk, and it was out of control. It was just doing what he wanted. And when I got back, she said, "You're a Zen practitioner, aren't you?" I said, "Yeah." She says, "How long?" I said, 20-some years at the time. She says, "Do you know what the hara is?" And I was like, "Yeah, I know what the hara is." She says, "Walk from the hara. Don't worry about the horse. Walk from the hara. You're in relationship, but walk from here." And so I was like, okay. And I just really just put my attention, let my attention, not hard, it just dropped into my hara, relaxed. Horse completely relaxed, because so was I. So was I. That's how powerful it is. And so we can meet each other in the hara, in this still point that can develop. And that really gives a lot to a person. They will pick up on it as well and relax. So stillness doesn't mean no movements going on. Doesn't mean it's motionless. So on the potter's wheel, back to that, to center, you have this thing going around, it's all wobbly and stuff, and you have to understand how to push horizontally in and down simultaneously to align it with gravity. And so that takes a while. It's called centering. And so could take years. I was always jealous of the people that like kind of got it right away. But it took me a long time to feel it and keep going to it time after time. And the interesting thing is when it's centered, it doesn't look like it's moving. It's not. It's centered. The whole ball is centered, and it's still. But the whole thing's still moving. We're the same. You know, when I sat down, I said, oh, this is it. I can just, this is centering. being still. When we settle into real stillness, thoughts can glide by, breath rises and falls. We're just not disturbed by the movement. Rumi says, when I run after what I think I want, my days are a furnace of distress and anxiety. If I sit in my own place of patience and stillness, what I need flows to me without pain. Because we can't force stillness. It kind of descends like dusk, like a sunset, like the water in that container of the vase. And then eventually, stillness finds us. Stillness finds us. I remember going to a Greenhaven prison, maximum security prison, and Daito Roshi was saying on the way there that when they first started to sit, when the group started to sit, the guards were terrified of the stillness. They thought they were planning something. Interesting. I was reading this guy named Robert Rosenbaum. He's a neurophysicist. And he's also a practitioner. And he observed, being still ourselves allows everything to be itself still. Being still ourselves. So what does that say about our encounters that stir us? And how, if we can find the still point, how that can hold anything, any wave, whether it's tidal, tsunamic, small, it can be a wave. It can be held. Stillness cultivating in Zazen allows objects, people in our surrounding, to be exactly what they are. We don't have to tinker. My mom used to say that to me. Stop tinkering. We don't have to, or hinder any, or make any effort to change them, or shape anything to fit our agendas. Stillness and silence, we return, we have this ability to return to our natural state. Seeing all that comes and goes, and just being still. There's that story of Angulimala and the Buddha. Angulimala had killed over 999 people, receiving a bad instruction from their teacher, who was jealous of something. And they used to cut fingers off and make a garland. He was a terror. Everyone, if they saw any sign of Angulimala, would run. And he was looking for number 1,000. And so he saw the Buddha. And he started chasing the Buddha. But he couldn't get up, couldn't catch up. So he screamed at the Buddha, "Stop! Be still!" And the Buddha let him catch up. No matter how hard he would run, the Buddha was just walking, he couldn't catch him. Could not catch him. So he gets to the Buddha, who, in his still point, turns around at peace. And he says, Angulimala says, "Aren't you afraid of me? And why couldn't I catch you?" And the Buddha said, "I stopped long ago. I advise you do likewise." And that, those few words, was a cognitive revolution for Angulimala. He ordained after that, became a monk. I think we all know people, someone who has that stillness. You could feel it, that they're in the still point. Yeah? We had a children's retreat here once. And Daito loved to go into character, and he became the forest wizard. We got some dry ice. It's very dramatic. All the kids were there in front of him. It was story time. And the dry ice came, and Daito came in, like slow motion football player. And we had a beard that was white. It was very fake, all cotton, twigs. He's all in his usual outfit of khakis and had some ashes on his face and whatnot. And he took a seat and he told a story about, he did a revision of Senju and Her Soul Are Separated. And he used Indian names for the kids. And then he had them ask questions at the end. And there was this one kid named Bobby Leonard who just stood with his hand up the whole time. I don't know, where's Robert? Were you here that time? No, was in Arzira. And Bobby used to raise his hand all the time. And Dido saw him, but he kept waiting and waiting. And Bobby would, and then finally he goes, Bobby, do you have a question? And he comes up, he stands right in front of Dido. And he says to the wizard, Dido, the wizard, show me a magic trick. And Dido said, okay. I'm sorry, I keep calling him Dido. The forest wizard says, okay. He says, plant your feet on the floor. And Bobby does it. He says, now I want you to concentrate. I want you to really concentrate. Bobby's like. And so he says, I want you to close your eyes and I want you to take a very deep breath and I want you to follow it the whole way in and the whole way out. So Dio says, forest wizard says, you ready? Yeah. And Bobby goes, okay, go. Bobby goes. His eyes pop open. He said, you feel it? Oh, he goes, yeah. He goes, that's magic. That's magic. Later, Shugan met with the parents. And they had some questions, and Shugan said, let me just tell you, I'm not a parent. And somebody asked, how do I teach Buddhism, religion, to my kids? And he says, you know, I'm not a parent. I have all these kids. But he said, they're watching you all the time. They're watching your every move. They're watching how you are in action, how you wash the dishes, how you answer the door, how you are at the grocery store, how you handle objects. How do I teach my children religion? What is religion? How we breathe. How we take our deepest breath. Where are we when we breathe? That's religion. The fundamental question. So stillness, silence, awareness aren't states, maybe. So if they're not states, we can't produce them. They're not created or brought in. And one thing about Zazen is we don't have to bring anything in, but we sure see what we do bring in. I would say, put down the backpack. Put down your backpack. And silence can be thought of as a witness without form. Silence is a witness without form. All states arise and fall away with silence. The movement of thought never touches that. Daito Roshi has a koan. I think it's interesting to hear Yaoshan's non-thinking. In the capping verse, he says, when the Dharma wheel turns, it always goes in both directions. The still point is its hub, and from here, all our myriad activities emerge. Rather than give solace to the body, give solace to the mind. When both body and mind are at peace, all things appear as they are, perfect, complete, lacking nothing. The commentary says, abide in neither thinking nor non-thinking. Thinking is linear and sequential, a separation from the reality that is the subject of thought, and thus is an abstraction rather than the reality itself. Not thinking is suppressive. It cuts away thoughts the moment they arise, making the mind into a great impenetrable mountain, dead, unresponsive. Non-thinking has no edges. It is the boundless mind of samadhi that neither holds on to nor lets go of thoughts. It is the manifestation of the Buddha mind in which the dualism of self and other, thinking and not thinking, dissolves. This is the Dharma of thusness, that is the right thought of all the Buddhas in the 10 directions. So I'll end with a story from Milarepa that I love. He was a yogi and meditation master in old Tibet who was liberated through motion. And after studying the Dharma for many years, he decided he wanted to go on to a long retreat in the caves of the wild Himalayas in the snow mountains to work on his meditation practice. And before departing, he went to see Marpa, his teacher, who was a farmer. As a parting gift, Marpa gave Milarepa a silver amulet. It was shaped like a mezuzah, and inside of it had a sealed scroll. And he told his beloved disciple, "You have my blessings for your retreat in the mountains. However, a time will come when things will be really hard, and you will find it difficult to practice meditation. When that time comes, open the amulet." So Milarepa took the amulet and wound his long black hair around it, rolling it into a bun on the top of his head. I don't know, I always think of Moreau at that point. Moreau. Sounds like Milarepa. Moreau took the amulet and wound his long black hair around it, rolling it in that bun on top of his head, and he traveled deep into the mountains. And he meditated there for years in the rocky caves on the cliffs. Sometimes he approached nomadic settlements to beg for food. Sometimes he ate only nettles. There were ups and downs, but overall, he made progress in his spiritual development. And then one day he woke up, unable to meditate at all. Sound familiar? One day you wake up, you just can't sit at all. He was out of sorts, weak, exhausted, and day after day he tried remedies to clear up his obstacle, but nothing worked. Eventually he became discouraged, and he thought, "I'm getting out of here." He was going to give up his whole meditation practice, and he prepared to leave the retreat, but he remembered his teacher's parting words. "The amulet on his head." So he went, unwound his long hair and opened the amulet for the first time. Inside was that scroll of paper. And he unrolled it, expecting to find, what would you think? What's he going to get in this little scroll? Obstacle-clearing prayers. He's hitting that hard time. A secret and technique for meditation. Instead, on the paper were illustrations of bodily poses and movements, along with instructions for breathing, stretching, and moving. It was a recipe for liberation through motion. So the practice we're engaging is to get off the cushion, move that stillness, aligning the body and mind in the stillness to move it into movement so that it becomes indistinguishable from one another. It says, Milarepa had been missing the body's moving wisdom. It was all in his head and his practice. He developed a deep trusting relationship to the body after that, which depends on what we're doing internally while we're moving. So we have this world we're in, and sometimes we may not realize what a healing balm our stillness is, what kind of offering it can be to the world.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.